So we've got Zoom recording, Audacity's a recording, Z is recording on the recorder. There's just a whole lot of recording going on. So we are media pros.
Kia ora tafano, croeso I bawb. Welcome everybody to Loss Forward with
Kath,
Lo and
Z.
Nailed it. First take. Brilliant.
That was actually the most natural it's ever been.
I'm Z, aka the Bulldozer. I am a neonatal nurse by profession and a rugby player by passion. I have two rugby projects, one's called Muslima Rugby, the other is called Studs in the Mud. I have three kids and I'm really passionate about getting people from low social or economical backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds into rugby. And I think that's what I'm known for at the moment.
I just got to chip in there because we interviewed Ben John last week and we said that we were interviewing you and he went, oh, legend. So you're also known as a legend.
Bless him. He's awesome.
Let's start with your passion, Z.
Okay.
When did you fall in love with rugby?
To be fair, the first time I touched a rugby ball, I was doing PE. Rugby was never part of the curriculum at school. My PE teacher was like rugby man, so she just said, you know what, let's do rugby today. And I owe a lot to her because she introduced me to rugby. I've never touched a rugby ball before up until that point. And just holding the rugby ball, running, it's just still something about it that I just loved and took to it. But it actually wasn't until I was 17 and I did A-levels in physical education. So my PE teacher said to me, what sport do you want to do? And I said, you know what, let me do rugby. Because I remembered back, you know, to the 14-year-old Z holding a rugby ball and I enjoyed that session so much. And yeah, so that's when I joined my first club at the age of 17 and I've never looked back since then.
Some of the listeners I know are from Barnes Ladies Rugby Club, which is how Z and I know each other. But many of our listeners are in Wales or maybe don't have a personal relationship with Z just yet. So for them, what position do you play or positions?
I started off in the wing at the age of 14. I think just everyone really starts with a wing, isn't it? They just push you aside so you're not really much get the ball much, but it helped me sort of look on from the edge and learn the game. So I started off at wing, then I went moving to the centres. So I played outside centre for the majority of my rugby journey. Absolutely loved it, like just loved it. And then after having kids, I moved into the forwards because I couldn't keep up. I couldn't keep up with the backs. I was just slower. So back row number 8. And now I'm potentially looking at becoming a prop. So I've literally gone through, quite a few decisions.
We've just heard your nickname, so maybe you can explain that to us and tell us a bit about what you're like as a player. If we were facing you on the pitch, what should we expect?
I feel like I'm a different person on the pitch. I'm very aggressive and that's just how I like to play. And I'm called the Bulldozer, but not for anything scary rugby related. It's just when I was playing for Millwall, the move was called the Bulldozer. And because I was a number 8 doing that move, it just became my name. You know how some people are called Tank or they're called like Mad Dog and it's not even...
That's me and Lo right there, Tank and
Tank
Mad
and
Dog.
Mad Dog. And it's not the way round you think it is.
I like to look at it as I'm a bulldozer because a bulldozer is a construction equipment that smashes things. I'm smashing stereotypes, you know, I'm breaking barriers and boundaries. So that's why I like the name and that's why I feel like it suits me, represents who I am and what I'm doing. But yeah, on the pitch, I'm pretty much like, go all guns blazing. I remember actually one time when, so after I had my second child, my son, I went to go and play for the first time after giving birth and I came off the pitch and I went to go and hold my little baby and people were looking at me like, no way is that your child. I'm like, yeah, you were just like a beast on the field and you come back and you just got this, you come off the pitch and you got this tiny like new baby. I'm like, yeah, like that's rugby for you. You do whatever, you leave everything on the pitch, you come back, you come off the pitch and you're just yourself again, so.
How old are you, Z?
I'm 28.
I asked that question because I think our listeners might also not realise that or think that, you know, that you've achieved a lot, you're also 28. I suppose there's that classic stereotype that like to be an athlete, you've got to be selfish, you've got to be focused on just being the best you can be. But to be a parent, you've got to be selfless. You know, mm-hmm. you do everything for your kids. How do you find that balance? Being a mum, playing rugby?
I love it. Like, I love the contrast, because on the pitch, it allows me to express myself. Like, I feel like I express myself when I'm on the pitch. And it's a release for me. I mean, you know, having three kids under five is mad in itself. And then obviously working in NHS is also mad. So rugby for me is that bit that is just for me, and I don't have to share it with the kids. I don't have to share it with my colleagues at work. It's just me and obviously my teammates. So for me, I love that I can be Z, bulldozer, beast on the pitch, and then come off and I'm mum and I'm wife and I'm just, you know, I'm just Z, you know. I love having that different identities. I find it very interesting, actually.
Whilst this is probably the most prestigious podcast you've ever been on, it's not the only podcast you've been on, because during lockdown, you announced your ambition to play for England.
Yes.
Please, everybody, follow at Road to Red Roses if you want to follow Z on her journey.
Thank you.
I guess I've got two questions there. One, when did you know that's what you wanted to do? And then when did you decide you were going to share it?
I actually only decided in lockdown. And I know it sounds crazy because some people have dreams from when they're young, they want to play for England. But mine literally happened during lockdown. And a lot of things happened during lockdown actually with me. But in terms of the dream, so I had this illustration. It's actually me in a Barnes kit, the original photo, and I got it made by Celia Kwanzaa, who plays for Wasps and GB Sevens. So she's an absolutely amazing artist. And I said to her, like, I want to put out a message out there, a Muslim woman to play for England. I want you to illustrate that for me. So it's me, but it's not meant to be me. So at the time, it was nothing to do with me. I just wanted a figure. So yeah, so she did it for me, and it was so emotional because exactly what I wanted. It was so perfect, and I feel it was very powerful. Every time I do this is my space. Every time I do a Zoom call, I do whatever, I sit here, and the first thing people say, oh my God, like, what's that behind you? Like, people notice it really straight away, and it's very powerful. So anyway, so that was what I wanted to do. So I put out a message there, and I said, I can't remember the caption. It was a long caption, but the main point was like, does this look strange for someone like this to represent England? And I had people were just commenting like, no, this would be amazing. This is, you know, but at that time, it didn't occur to me that it could be me. And people started to ask me, Zia, but why don't you do it? Like, that could be you. Why don't you give it a shot? And I'm like, I've got three kids. Where the hell am I going? You know, playing. I've got three kids. I work in NHS, doing 12-hour shifts. Like, where am I, you know, how can I play for England? I was really in doubt, if that makes sense. But I just kept on getting that question. And then during lockdown, obviously the coronavirus was very tough. Working at NHS, I was looking after babies and their mothers were like on ventilators. Wasn't sure if the mothers were going to survive. So a lot of things happened in lockdown. And I just thought, life is really too short and you don't know what's around the corner. And I thought to myself, why don't I just go for it? You know, let me just do it. And then that's when I decided, you know what, I'm going to play for England. I mean, and I always say I'm going to try, but there's something powerful in just manifestation, just saying it, like, you're going to do it. And that's why I just say it, like, I'm going to do it. And you'd be surprised that sometimes you say things and it actually happens. So yeah, I'm very like big on manifestation, affirmation, visualization, all those kind of stuff. I'm really big on that. So that's how it came about, really. And I was so scared to tell people. I remember speaking to Meg, actually. I said to Meg, like, because I was doing one-to-one coaching with her.
Shout out Meg Jones.
I said to Meg, like, actually, I said to her, I want to play in the Premiership. So I didn't say England at that point. I said, I want to play in the Premiership. And she was like, Z, like, just own it. If this is what you want to do, just write on the wall and, like, just own it. And that conversation really helped me, you know, reflect and be like, actually, I want this dream. Let me just go for it. Then I said to her, actually, I want to play for England. So it went from Pram to England. But I was so scared, actually, because I wasn't sure what the reaction would be. I was so concerned about what people would think. Like, would people, like, mock me? Would they think, like, no chance, like, she can't do it? Like, would they... I just was a bit afraid of what they'll say, but it got to a point where I thought, do you know what? I don't give a shit. Like, I'm just going to put it out there. And the reason why I did put it out there was because I want this to be a journey. Like, I want it to be a journey with other people, not just myself. So for me, putting it out there, it was like me saying to the world, like, I'm going to go for this dream. Like, come on this journey with me. If you have your own personal dreams you want to follow, let's do it together, sort of thing. So I've created the Road to Red Roses. I put the dream out there and the response was just overwhelming. Like, I was so taken aback. Like, so many people were like, you can do it, Z, go for it. You're inspiring. You know, we can't wait to see you in an England show. It was, I was like, wow. Like, so yeah, the response was epic. Yeah.
I'm just sat here captivated by you. I'm sorry. I know I'm being really silent today, but I'm literally like, I'm just sitting, soaking it all in. I'm taking it all on. So forgive me.
For our listeners who can't see, Kath and I have just been nodding and smiling and like...
all wide-eyed.
Yeah. Great. Well, I've got nothing to add, so I think we can wrap up there. Now that you've put it out there and you're like, shit, I got to do it. Like, yeah. What are you doing? You know, like, what are the things? How's your life changed? How's your training changed? And then what can we do, you know, us, but everybody listening to help you get there as well?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a nice question. So first off, I've had to definitely make sacrifices because I'm the type of person, if I say I want to do something, I just go and like, I do it and I'll kick myself if I don't end up doing what I said I'm going to do. So I've put in nursing on hold. That's one thing that was really difficult for me because I wasn't premature myself. Being a neonatal nurse was my dream job. Like, ever since I was young, I knew this is the profession I want to go into just because of my own personal story. And then having to put that aside was a big call for me. Like, nursing is secure. The second thing I'd say is in terms of physically, like, my body's went into shock for like 1 month. What the hell is she doing? All of a sudden I started, you know, lifting weights. So I'm lifting like strength training 3 times a week. Obviously going to rugby training at Barnes. Aside from that, I'm doing my own thing. That's sort of like handling skills. You know, on the page, on the Road to Red Roses, I literally put all the training that I'm doing. And I've never been this active in my life. Like, I've played rugby, you know, as a hobby, just as and when, but this, because I have a purpose now, everything has to be more planned. So yeah, so in terms of physically, I've had to work a lot harder than I usually do. And I'm stripping everything back. I've been playing rugby for about 10 years on and off, but because I have a goal, I'm literally stripping everything back to basics. Even like we talked about Ben John, I actually had a session with him and he's absolutely amazing. Like, he was so good and gave me a lot of amazing tips. And I'm starting to sort of tweak certain areas of my game, which has been exciting. And I'm just excited. Like, I'm really excited because, you know, when you give yourself a goal and you just do it and you have the support, you have the tools, it's just... For me, I feel like it's just a matter of time. I know I'm going to apply myself. That goes without saying. But the next thing is that I just need that opportunity. So it just excites me. And I know I'm talking a lot. You probably need to break in.
No. It's great.
Wait, and then there was another thing you asked, isn't it? How can you guys help? So I think to get the message out there on what I'm doing, I think is a good way because this journey is bigger than me. Like, it's not just about me. When I get that England shirt, that cap is for everyone. It's not just for me. It's literally for everyone that ever had a dream that felt like maybe they couldn't chase it or they were a bit scared. Anyone that was different from the crowd that felt like they were too scared to be who they are and to stand out. Like, everyone that I represent, like the mothers, you know, the people from different communities, like Black, Asians, women, you know, like everyone across the board. And I just feel like me succeeding everyone succeeds. That's how I genuinely feel. So sharing my message and sharing to people what I'm trying to do will help, because it's part of the bigger picture. If people are seeing that I'm following my dreams, hopefully they will follow their dreams, and hopefully I'm able to inspire and empower other people in different ways. Like, I have had messages of people telling me, oh, I'm going to do a master's degree. It's nothing, you know, because I've seen you, like, going for your dreams. Obviously, it's not rugby related, but this is the type of impact that I want to do. Like, I want you to follow or to do something or achieve the goals that is important to you. It doesn't have to be anything like playing for England. Whatever is within your interest. So this is the, so spreading the message would be the best way to help.
I know Kath and I have seen it, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will have seen this week as well, that Women Six Nations published the video of you meeting
Maggie,
legend.
Yeah.
Maggie, how was that? And how long have you had to keep that quiet?
Oh, that was just epic. I got approached by the Women Six Nations team, and I think because I did work with O2 before, and so they approached me and they said, you know, they wanted me to be part of the men's Six Nation campaign. And I did a video and I said to everyone, oh, I'm going to play for England. And I think I was talking to Anthony Watson, Elliot Daly, and Jamie George. So they said they want to put me in for both. So I knew then that something was going to come up with the Women's Six Nations, but I didn't know when. So when the time came, they contacted me and they said, look, they want to do a piece with me. They want to share my story. But what they want is they want me to write a letter to myself. And they want me to meet Maggie. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. Like, I've always wanted to meet her. And we do actually speak. We've been speaking for quite some time now. I remember when I won the Grassroots Sportswoman of the Year award, she did a little message for me. It was so sweet. And her and Shauna, actually. And so we've been talking, but we've never actually met face to face. And this was the perfect opportunity for me to do that. So meeting her, I was nervous, because I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm meeting the person that I look up to, the person that I've always, you know, yeah. I was just amazing. So she came out car, she came out the car and I was like, oh my God, like, Maggie's right there. Oh my God, Maggie's right there. I was like, okay, calm down, Z, let me just, you know, be cool. So she came over and she's just so sweet. Like, she's so down to earth. There's not, like, no ego, no cockiness. She's just so real and down to earth. And she's like, hi, Z, how are you? Oh my God, I feel like I'm your social media stalker. I'm like, oh my God, like Maggie saying, she's so I don't know. And it was just such a lovely encounter. And we just vibed really well, like her vibe, my vibe. It was just perfect. And being able to read the letter, so I read the letter out to her, and you could just see, like, the way she was so, that she appreciated the words. And that letter, it came from the heart. And actually, it only took me 10 minutes to write, because it's feelings that I'm always feeling. It's things that are just there.
I laughed, I cried, I clapped along. It's really from the heart. Yeah. And I think we can all agree it's amazing and moving. I also thought, as I was watching it, and I wanted to ask you if this was weird, Z, meeting your, like, hero, but also having to stay socially distanced. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, oh, I can't hug you. Like,
oh my God,
what do
I
do?
I know. It was awful, because obviously the first thing you want to do is, like, hug them. But I was just so in awe of her that I'd, even if she was like 100 meters away, I would have still been happy. You know, so, like, it was, like, we didn't even need to be that close for us to feel the connection and energy. Like, it was so good. Like, the vibe was amazing. So, yeah, but it was a bit difficult, I can't lie to you. But hopefully we'll get to have a good hug sometime down the line, yeah.
Yeah, manifest it now.
Yeah, manifest it. I'm going to hug Maggie, if you're listening. We're going to do that hug, okay?
Who else do you have up there as your kind of rugby idols?
To be honest with you, I think everyone that plays in the England squad is someone that I am inspired by, because knowing how much, obviously I didn't know 100%, but even just at amateur level, how much work you have to do to during a game, they're playing like at professional level. So you can imagine how much time and effort to get fit, to make sure, you know, they know their game plan, to just be ready. And on top of that, you're the pride of the country. Like, you've got the country rooting for you. So I can imagine the pressure. I find all of them incredible, if I'm honest. I do really think that they're an amazing bunch of women. And honestly, hats off to them.
See, I was wondering if we could chat about representation and moving the game forward. Mm-hmm. Because I know that Maggie got in touch with you about a role with the RFU.
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of like off-pitch work, if I'm honest with you, in terms of rugby, it's funny because I'm literally just living my life and enjoying rugby as my passion. But that in itself is interesting to people. Like, me just living and playing rugby is interesting to people. And I'm like, I'm not doing anything special. I'm literally just being me. But I love that because if I don't have to try, like, I'm just get up and play rugby, and people are like, wow, you're awesome. I'm like, oh, thanks. but obviously, yeah, I do have passion for certain things, like, you know, representation is a big thing. And even in that VT, the film that we did, the short piece, we was talking about can't see, can't be. And I said, actually, can't see it, be it, because I feel like can't see it, can't be it is slightly negative, because you're thinking, oh, I don't see anyone that looks like me, oh, I can't be it. But if you flip it and be like, I can't see it, so I'm going to be it, it puts a little positive spin on it. So we did have a conversation about that when we met. And I think, so there was a point where, like, there was a advertisement going on for the diversity and inclusion group, working group for the RFU. And I didn't know about it, but I think three people, including Maggie, or probably four, including Maggie, sent me this application and was like, oh my God, you should apply. Like, the kind of things that you talk about, the kind of things you're doing already, you'd be such a good fit. So I was like, I'm in an RFU, and I thought, let me look through the, you know, criteria, what did they like? And to be honest with you, I think there was only two things that fit me in the criteria. And I think that was sort of passion for the game, and then knowing that you want to make a difference, and then being committed. Because everything else was just, seemed so, I don't know, the other criteria was about being clued up on governance and information and governance and all that kind of stuff, and that's not up my street. Like, I've never done that kind of work, so I was a bit put off, if I'm honest. But I thought, and let me just go for it. And I thought, if Maggie's telling me that I should go for it, she must, I don't know, she must see something, she must feel like I can bring something to the table, so let me just go for it. And actually, even Nicole, she was one of the first people, Nicole, that plays for us at Barnes as well. She was one of the first people that was like, Z, like, I think you should go and do this. So I applied, and I got an interview. So I was super, super excited. And we had a conversation, and I poured my heart out to them about my passion for rugby. And we talked about, you know, the role and everything like that. And I said to them, like, I'm willing to learn. Like, they asked me, so what roles within the working group would you go for? I said, you know what? I don't mind. Put me anywhere. Like, I just want to be part of the people that make decisions and make an impact, especially for something that I'm passionate for. Like, I don't mind learning the other bits, but I just know that I'm passionate about it, and I know that I will commit. So the interview went really well in my eyes. I feel like it, and they, you know, we even like got talking off the cuff. Like, it was really well. I felt like it was a good interview. Anyway, so I waited for about a week, and then they got back to me and said, you know, like, unfortunately, I was unsuccessful, like, to moving on to the next stage, because I think there was a next stage after that. And I was a bit like, oh, wow, like, I really thought I had it in the bag. So I thought, can I ask for feedback? Like, I want to know, like, so next time, if I'm applying for something like this, what I need to work on. And the feedback was, like, more to do with the governance side of things and the leadership. Like, I haven't had experience in that kind of stuff. And I thought, okay, like, fine. I just took it on the chin. I thought, okay, whatever, that's fine. And so I wasn't able to be a part of that. But the thing is, as long as whoever's on it is doing the right thing, that's, like, I mean, we have to look at a bigger picture here. It doesn't mean because I didn't get it, it's the end of the world. As long as people that are in there are doing their jobs properly, that's the most important thing, regardless of who gets it. And yeah, so, but I can't, I mean, that was just one part, but RFE in general have been actually amazing. Like when I won the Grassroots Best Sportsman of the Year, they shared my story, they did a little clip for me. I was not expecting that. They even got Maggie to obviously say congratulations and Shauna Brown as well. And they've been putting me, like I got a chance to go to Twickenham through Blue Light Tickets because I work for NHS, and I got to go to Twickenham and watch the Autumn International, I think one of the games against France. And that's opportunity that RFU has given me just because they love what I do and they, you know, they're trying to support me. So they have been good to me, if I'm honest with you.
I don't know anything about governance either. but from the outside, it seems to me like that's something you can learn, and I would love yours to be a voice at like board or working committee level in the RFU.
I mean, with board level stuff, I guess it's, I feel like I like being hands on and being on the ground and seeing the impact and seeing how, obviously I understand that the decisions at the top obviously will impact what's happening on the ground. So you can never say never, but I do love being on the ground and seeing and feeling and talking to people and, you know, really have those sort of face-to-face interactions and being in amongst the stuff. But who's to say? You never know. Like, I know Maggie Alfonsi, she's said openly that she wants to be RFU president, and I do hope she gets to do that one day. If there's a petition, gosh, I will sign it.
Yeah, like, campaign. Yeah, she's manifesting, you see.
Yeah.
Exactly, Katie, I'm definitely
come on the pod, Maggie. it always seems to me in rugby, like, that's the side that is the least visible and the least transparent. Like, what the hell goes on in boards? How do they work? You know, how are they getting where they're getting? And I often think, and this might just be because it's my style as well, like, I'd love boards to be a bit more on the ground, or like, you know, I feel like boards are the ones that need to change so that they can be open to the people who have the on the ground experience to share their thoughts, because they're the people on the ground and they're affected by the decisions of the boards. But they always, especially in rugby, seem like so far away, so kind of
sort of like suit and tie kind of
thing. Yeah. Faceless. Yeah.
But one thing I'm actually noticing is that the people on the ground, the people with the stories, the people that are doing things, they're the ones that are actually making a lot of ground and a lot of impact. Recently with the hashtag Enough campaign, hashtag I Care campaign, there's a lot of momentum right now within women's rugby. And those people that are putting themselves in the platforms and, you know, raising their voice and the issues that matter to them within the rugby scene, that's powerful.
We started with you introducing yourself and talking about yourself. Mm-hmm. But given that you've got a big social media presence and you're on podcasts and things like that, how do you stay authentic and true to your identity and your heritage when you can also see that some people might want to use you for box ticking, or mm-hmm. you talked on your Instagram about like people pulling out different aspects of your identity?
Mm. I think for me, it's very important to not be short-sighted. I have to look at the bigger picture. Okay, you want to use them as a box ticker. Some people can be really angry about that and really upset about that. But I'm thinking, okay, what can I use you for? Like, is me going on that platform going to elevate and amplify my voice? Then yeah, if I'm going to tick your box, you're going to tick my box as well. Do you know what I mean? So I sort of look at it from that perspective. I sort of weigh up what is the bigger picture here. If I'm going to be a box ticker, what can I get that will help me on my bigger journey and what I'm trying to do? So I think that's how I sort of overcome that thing.
Do you think that that's a natural kind of quality of yours, or has that been a conscious choice over the years to try and train that in yourself to be positive, to see that bigger picture, to keep kind of pushing forward on your path, regardless of all the mess and the murkiness around you?
Yeah, I do feel like it's something that comes natural to me, just because I'm a thinker. Like, I always want to know why. I always want to know the end goal. Like, if I'm doing this, I want to know this is a means to an end. Like, I don't usually do things for the sake of it. I do it because I know that this potentially is what's going to happen afterwards. And sometimes that can be a bit dangerous, if I'm honest with you, because sometimes you can't foresee things that happen in life. That's just life. Sometimes you go in with the intention and then you come out and it's like, oh shit, this is not what I expected. But I think for me, yeah, I do like to look at the bigger picture a lot of the time. So I could potentially be doing something that's a bit, like, I'm struggling, but I know that, okay, at the end of it, it's going to be worth it. So I do look at life like that in general. Like, this might be tough, but it's going to be worth it in the end. So, yeah, I do try to look at a bigger picture majority of the time.
Can we do something for all the future unions, organisations, media outlets that are going to come to UZ and might need to tick boxes? Can we put out, what are your boxes, so that they know? Let's just make it transparent. What are you looking for, Z? What do you need ticked?
To be honest with you, I want to leave a legacy. Like, this is something that's really important to me. I want to, when I'm gone, I'm not in this world anymore, I want people to remember me for who I am. I want to be remembered as somebody that cared, somebody that used my privilege, whatever privilege I have, to help others. And I think sometimes, like, in terms of, like, people always want to be happy in life, right? And for me, happiness is making other people happy. Sometimes you can have all the money in the world, you know, you could be rich, you could have everything you want. But if you're just keeping that to yourself, I think it's short-lived. But if you're using that, obviously you're going to enjoy a little bit, but you're giving what you have to other people. It doesn't have to be monetary value, but in kind or whatever it is. That's sort of like can be reciprocated. And maybe they will, because you've helped them, might go and help someone else. So it's kind of like a domino effect. So I want to be that person. I'm trying to sort of build a legacy. So when I'm not here anymore, people can remember me as somebody that did good and stood for what she believed in and got the shit done, basically. Get it done is one of my things. Get it done.
Wicked. I'm just so inspired by this whole chat.
Like, just gonna go and have another little cry in the corner.
Oh, you guys are so funny.
A couple of other projects that you mentioned at the start of the podcast, can you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, so Studs in the Mud is one of the projects I founded. I was on maternity leave and I was, you know, nursing this baby, obviously my child, and
this random baby.
I don't know, there's something about maternity leave. I don't know if other mothers that are listening can relate. You just get these ideas, like ideas just come to you. I don't know if it's the hormones or just being at home with the kids. I don't know what it is, but you just feel like, oh my god, maybe I need to do this, I need to do that. I want to change the world. I don't know, you just get these ideas. And Studs in the Mud, I just sat to myself, thought, I like general, like doing charity work. And I thought, what can I do? And obviously I love rugby. So I thought, doing charity, using my passion, put it together. And then that's how Studs in the Mud sort of came to me. And so it's basically trying to use rugby and its values to help make positive change. But I launched it in Ghana, so I'm of Ghanaian heritage. I wasn't even sure rugby even existed in Ghana. And it's sort of like my second home, and I wanted to do something there. And obviously there's a lot of underprivileged kids and deprived areas, so I thought, let me start there. I got in contact with somebody that was from Ghana, and I said to them, like, tell me what the landscape of rugby is in Ghana. I want to help you guys. She works for Ghana Rugby, and she's in the Get Into Rugby program in Ghana. And she was sending me photos of kids, like, playing rugby without any shoes or in flip-flops, like, not really appropriate footwear. And, you know, the sort of resources that we're using weren't, like, great. So I thought, actually, this is where I can jump in. I was like, tell me what you need. Like, and I just literally started a GoFundMe page. People donated. I shipped a load of equipment to Ghana, the money I used to buy the boots for the kids, and I went out there and met these kids, and it was such an honour to be in the company of these kids that were passionate about rugby. They just needed that extra boost, you know. And it was just so, and giving like a boot that cost like, what, 20 quid to a young child, and they were just so, you could see they're so happy. I'm like, this is amazing, like, this is what I want to do, just use my passion to sort of make others you know, happy. And I say predominantly it's women and children that I'm targeting because they're sort of the future, isn't it? The other project is Muslima Rugby, which is it's more of a personal one because it stemmed from my own experiences of being a black Muslim woman within rugby and feeling, you know, things we talked about not feeling like I fitted in, not feeling like I belonged. And then there's other little things like just looking different on the pitch, not drinking alcohol. You know how rugby is. We go to the bar, you have a pint and all that kind of stuff. And it was really difficult for me to be in those spaces. So this Muslima Rugby is sort of trying to come back the things that I went through. I don't want anyone else to really go through that. So I set up that sort of project, if you like, or a space for other Muslim women in particular, because research is showing we're literally the least active people in society. And although that annoys me, like, I wanted to have a space where to celebrate us. Like, there's a lot of Muslim women that play rugby. When I started the platform and being active on social media, a lot of people reached out to me, oh my God, like, I play rugby too. You know, Muslims from different parts of the world, not just in the UK. The ones in the UK, I can probably count on one hand that I know personally that I've interacted through social media. But I wanted to be a space where we just talk about, you know, our experiences, to empower each other, to smash stereotypes again, because, you know, the stereotypes you get as Muslim women a lot is they have many kids, they're just at home cooking clean, they can't do this, can't do that sort of thing. And, yeah, so I just really wanted that page to highlight the positivity that Muslim women are doing within rugby. Yeah, and it's still a work in progress, but I also want it to be a safe place for other rugby clubs to come to us. If they get a Muslim woman coming to their team, what can we do to accommodate her to make her feel comfortable? What can we do to sort of relieve those sort of barriers that they face? And it could be something little as, you know, what kind of sports hijab am I going to wear to play rugby? And it may seem like something little, but it's a big thing. For example, schools, the hijabi wearing girls at school, they probably just wear the same hijab to play sports and they go back into their lessons all sweaty. When I feel like if they had a sports hijab and they took it off and put their normal hijab back on after sports, just like how they would do with their PE kit, I feel like that would, you know, it's just those little things that make a big difference.
Sensitivity, sports consultancy, or, you know, like, you need people with that lived experience to make sure other organisations or, you know, people who are working with groups who might also live that experience know things like that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't become a barrier.
Yeah. I do get a lot of questions like, how can we make more Muslim women play sport? Like, that's the number one question I get.
And also it's up to you, Z, to solve it, because that's how the world works.
Exactly. Yeah. Some people just don't want to play sport. That's it. That's the answer. And, but that question is definitely one I do get often, but that's after people say, aren't you hot in that? That's talking about, aren't you hot in your hijab? You can tell when it's coming from a journalist. Some people literally don't know. Maybe I'm the first Muslim they met. I don't know. Especially in this sort of space, because I recognise that I am a minority. So I don't get offended or anything if some people ask me questions, because genuinely I believe this is probably the first time in that setting they've seen someone like me. Even recently someone asked me, like, they want to learn more about Ramadan and like how I fast and train and things like that, which I'm definitely more than happy to sort of speak to them about. It's only the odd people that ask me stuff. A lot of the people see through the hijab, like, they don't really focus on that. I think generally just see who I am as a person regardless of what I've got in my head. And I like that because, okay, I'm a Muslim woman and I wear the hijab. That's not the only thing about me. You know, I'm Z, I'm the bulldozer, you know. So I don't want to just appeal to people of my demographic. I want to branch out to everyone and anyone.
Kath and I are also trying something out. You know, we don't have all the answers. We're growing and learning about rugby, we're learning about podcasting, we're learning about ourselves, so we want to kind of celebrate the mistakes we make along the way. For you, what is the best mistake you've made, or the best thing that you've lost forward?
Ooh, I know you gave me the brief, but I wouldn't say it's a mistake, but I think in terms of my journey, stepping outside my comfort zone, it's been the hardest thing, but the best thing. because I've always been the person that doesn't like to take risks, loves the comfort zone. I don't want to venture out. And literally during this lockdown or during the pandemic since it started, I've slowly started to come out of the comfort zone. And things are opening up for me because of that, because I refuse to just, you know, not take risk and be in the comfort. I've literally pushed myself to feel actually uncomfortable. And all of a sudden, I'm building myself and I'm becoming the person that I want to be. And it's crazy to think that I wouldn't have even gotten to this stage. I wouldn't be here talking to you. You probably wouldn't find me that interesting if I'd stayed put, if I didn't move from my comfort. So I would just encourage anyone that's listening now, like literally try, just take that step outside of your comfort zone. It's tough, it's a tough call, but there's so much, you can have so much potential and you won't know if you just stay in that one place. So I definitely encourage, it's scary, I can't lie to you, but this, you don't know what you can be like this. You literally don't know what you could even achieve if you step out of your comfort zone. So go for it. I mean, if it's that bad, you can go back.
It's still there. Comfort zone's not going anywhere.
Exactly. But just try it out, you know?
I mean, this is our comfort zone, isn't it, Kath? That we've been best friends for about 22 years.
She thinks.
I don't know, did I answer your question?
Yeah.
You have absolutely smashed everything about this podcast. So yes, you answered the question. Well done.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm so smiley.
Yeah, same. Full of life now. Yeah.
Thank you, Z.
Yeah,
I was having
you.
A really crap day before
Aww.
This.
Same.
And this has just changed my outlook on the world.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're a superstar.